genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. And you want to keep that number handy because we're going to be giving away two sandwiches or two salads to Urbane Cafe, two locations here in Ventura to serve you. We'll be doing that a little bit later in the show. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is looking back, looking forward, and looking inward. Each of my guests will sharpen our focus in the direction that they think is important. My first guest is a sports attorney and author. He's looked at how our national pastime has been broadcast over the electronic media, radio, and television. We'll discuss his book, Broadcasting Baseball. My second guest is a futurist, but not just any futurist. He's the futurist that Google hired to help them gaze into the future. He'll share eight future technologies that will define the world in the coming decade. My third guest is the most sought-after public speaker down under. She's an Australian businesswoman who pulled herself out of poverty by starting a multi-million dollar business. We'll discuss her latest book, There Are Only Two Times in Life, Now and Too Late. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. My first guest, Eldon Ham, is a lawyer, multi-published author, and adjunct professor at Chicago-Kent College of Law. He is the distinguished legal analyst for WSCR Radio in Chicago and is a three-time past chair of the Chicago Bar Committee on Law and Literature. He has been nationally quoted in such media as the New York Times, USA Today, Business Week, ESPN.com, the Chicago Sun-Times, the Washington Post, and many others. Eldon has been featured in the National Law Review, and his articles have appeared in the Harvard University Sports and Entertainment Law Review, the Street & Smith Business Sports Business Journal, Seton Hall Sports Law Journal, the Marquette Sports Law Journal, and elsewhere. Eldon is the author of four published books. His most recent book is titled Broadcasting Baseball, A History of Our National Pastime on Radio and Television. He's practiced law in the Chicagoland area since 1976, largely focusing on sports and entertainment law for the past 20 years, including a decade as general counselor at ZSMG, one of the nation's leading sports agencies. Welcome to the show, Eldon. How are you today?
Thank you. Glad to be here. I'm doing fine.
Well, it's glad to have you on board and love to talk to thought leaders because you sort of combine the best of the business and the sports world together. Your latest book, Broadcasting Baseball, is a whole lot of fun. And I found it interesting, the subtitle of your book, A History of Our National Pastime on Radio and Television. Ironically, baseball wouldn't have become the national pastime without radio and then later TV to bring it to millions of fans. So give us an overview of how baseball shaped broadcasting and how broadcasting shaped baseball.
Sure. In fact, that's the key question that was really behind doing the book in the first place. It occurred to me that over time, a number of things happened and converged all in the same decade. I'm sort of a student of fate and the way things evolve. I tell my students when I teach here in Chicago that nothing really happens in a vacuum. So I like to look at baseball and broadcasting not as completely separate things, but things that sort of influenced each other as they grew. So the advent of Babe Ruth, the commercialization of radio, some really timely rule changes like banning the spitball, and the Roaring Twenties themselves all converged at the same time, and out of that came the game that we know, the thing that became the national pastime. And why'd they all happen at once? Well, Ruth had the excitement of the home runs. The owners understood that home runs were selling tickets, and so they made some real changes to make those things happen. The Roaring Twenties was kind of a good environment for anything to take place. And then along came this thing called radio. Originally, the baseball owners thought that radio was something to fear. They thought that people would stay home. I mean, why would you go to a ballpark if you could get the same game sitting on your front porch, right?
Right.
As it happened, radio increased attendance. And that's the first connection we have between broadcasting as we know it and influencing the game of baseball, because it propelled the game. Not only the interest of people at home, but those people got interested enough to get up, go down the street, and visit the ballpark. So in Chicago, as a matter of fact, the Cubs experienced an increase of 117% in their attendance after they started broadcasting games on radio, which started back in 1925.
Wow, that's impressive. And, of course, WGN has been one of the pioneers in broadcast radio, baseball broadcasts over the radio. Well, let me ask you this. My guest is Eldon Hamm. Eldon, let me ask you this. So the convergence of Babe Ruth, the radio, the rule changes, and so forth helped to form radio as the dominant medium. But explain how radio overtook print journalism, which had been the broadcast medium of choice for baseball for literally decades.
Oh, sure. Everybody followed it in the paper, and you couldn't wait till the afternoon edition came out, and you could see the baseball scores, that sort of thing. In fact, originally when WGN started broadcasting baseball, they didn't do it by broadcasting the games. They literally read the box scores over the radio in the afternoon. Doesn't sound very scintillating now, but you got to start somewhere, right?
That's right.
Baseball itself, as it turns out, in my view, sports in general, baseball in particular, certainly originally, is the original reality TV. We look at reality TV shows now and think there's something new, but that's what sports programming is. It's a sort of a predetermined rubric of something that's going to happen without a script and can be filmed for everybody to watch and enjoy, and that's really what happens when you broadcast a baseball game on television. But back in the old days, you didn't have TV, you had the radio. And with radio just getting its legs, the whole country was spellbound by this talking box sort of thing where you put it in your parlor, and all of a sudden the news got read to you.
Well, let's take us back, Eldon, because that's an interesting angle, and I want to pursue this a little bit more if we can, because give us the historical perspective of just how revolutionary radio broadcasting was, because none of us listening to the sound of our voice ever remember a time when there was no radio. So you've got an interesting story in the introduction of your book about the first Christmas broadcast ever over the wireless to ships at sea. Talk to us about just how revolutionary this was. It's almost like magic to the people living in the 20s.
Exactly. It was as cutting edge to them as the Internet is to us now. And to use a current term, I suppose it really did go viral. Once radio became commercialized and the general public could get hold of it, they went crazy for this talking box. And the story that you were referring to at the beginning of the book is that if one is going to do a history of baseball broadcasting, it's a challenge to figure out exactly when it really started. Was it the telegraph reports that were sent out to local bars in the 1890s? That was kind of a beginning. But this thing called radio really got its beginning with ships at sea. In fact, the Navy, the U.S. Navy, controlled it originally, and private enterprise had a bit of a hard time wresting it away from the U.S. government. But nonetheless, they started it with dots and dashes. The old radio room, in fact, in the Titanic, was some state-of-the-art equipment that made use of radio waves, but only the dots and dashes variety. You're referring to the story back even earlier in 1906, where some ships at sea were listening to some similar equipment, and all of a sudden they got actual words. The song Silent Night turned up. It was happened to be Christmas Eve. And they didn't know whether it was magic or God singing to them in the dark of night. Turned out to be a hobbyist by the name of Reginald Fessenden on the East Coast, who was tinkering with his own radio equipment, and sent out that original broadcast.
Amazing. My guest is Eldon Hamm, author of the book Broadcasting Baseball, A History of the National Pastime on Radio and Television. So, Eldon, let's fast forward to really sort of the progression of baseball from the 40s till now. Baseball has had its fair share of famous play-by-play broadcasters. Our own Vin Scully here in Southern California, his former partner Red Barber, Harry Carey, Jack Buck, Jack Brickhouse, Mel Allen, just to name a few. So how and why did the play-by-play announcer's role sort of eclipse the narration of the game?
It's interesting that you say Vin Scully, too, because a lot of people regard him as perhaps the best. And deciding who the best is at anything is not particularly easy because everybody has different talent.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Stone here in Chicago is one of the more insightful color men I think I've ever heard. Jack Buck had a resonant voice. Harry Carey was just flat-out entertaining. you had Phil Rizzuto in New York and so on. Vin is still unique in the sense that he was the only one in the past number of decades who really did it all by himself. Vin did not have the color man.
That's right.
Get back sort of to your question. So for a while, it was a play-by-play man, and then eventually they got the idea to bring people in who knew what they were talking about and could add stories and insight. And, you know, baseball is the only sport where that's really a good idea in the sense that you got all this downtime between action, several seconds between pitches. Sometimes you have breaks in the action, and the color man could then dig deep into these stories. I suppose one of the original was did it all at once together. That would have been Dizzy Dean, who himself had been a
former ball player with the Cardinals, yes.
Star player, yeah, and very eccentric. And a rather down-home drawl, and he was a great, great storyteller. So he'd not only tell you when the strikes and balls took place, but he would fill all the dead air with colorful stories about the old days, which is interesting, by the way, because the original baseball broadcasters didn't know you weren't supposed to have dead air. And, in fact, some of them, most of them actually, came from the print media, so they were purists. They just thought you would say what happened when it happened and keep quiet until something else happened. Well, that created dead air all over the place. So it took a while before they realized you got to fill it up with something. And the color commentators and the play-by-play men eventually emerged to make it all work, except for Vin Scully. He does it all.
He does, and he is a miracle, and we're very fortunate to have him out here in the greater Los Angeles area. But, Eldon, you were lawyering up on me just a moment ago where you said it's hard to pick the very best play-by-play announcer, but I'm going to put your feet to the fire. Who, in your opinion, is the very best play-by-play announcer?
I'll take the easy answer and agree with most, with Vin Scully, but the reason is that if you add together everything in the stew, it comes out Vin Scully because of longevity, popularity, his ability to do it all on his own. He's always done it all on his own. Milo Hamilton, by the way, who I did interview for the book and got some good stories from the old days, he now broadcasts with the Houston Astros, but he started out in Chicago and has been in other places. He's actually done it as long as Vin. They're both 60-year men. Vin, though, was with the one team all those years, all the way back to the Brooklyn Dodgers, and as you said, came up when Red Barber was still there, who was something of a mentor to Vin Scully. So of all of them, I think I would pick Vin Scully. Others have their traits. Like I said, Harry Carey was beyond entertaining for anybody who would listen to him.
Yes, he
in
was.
In the early days, he was exciting. In later days, he just became rather comical, but either way, he was fun to listen to.
That he was. And it was interesting that Harry Carey and Jack Buck were partnered together in St. Louis in 1964. Harry Carey doing the play-by-play, Jack Buck doing the color commentary. My guest is Eldon Hamm, author of the book Broadcasting Baseball. And Eldon, I think it's interesting, if you've watched baseball long enough like you and I have, you see some very interesting developments. And one of the developments is the advent of baseball broadcasting families. And you mentioned Harry Carey, but then not only is Harry Carey a famous broadcaster play-by-play, but his son Skip and his grandson Chip are all play-by-play announcers for various teams. Jack Buck and his son Joe Buck, Marty and Tom Brenneman, just to name a few. Why do these baseball broadcasting family dynasties crop up? What do they tell us about the game of baseball and baseball broadcasting in general?
It's an interesting phenomenon. It's almost similar to the whole concept of a spin-off television show. You get your audience hooked on a particular show, whether it was the old All in the Family or any of the TV shows that spawn all these other spin-off versions of themselves. And in a way, that's what you get here. You have Jack Buck, but then you get Joe Buck coming up, who has the same name, sounds a little bit like him, and you have an established audience that says, that's a brand. That's a brand that I can identify with. I feel comfortable with this this spinoff called Joe Buck, for example. The Carries are a good example because there's more than two of them. You had Harry and Skip and Chip Carey. The Brennemans are a good example, too, with Marty and Tom. But it reflects a mature industry. So with a mature industry, the barriers to entry are a little higher. And it helps. I don't believe it's not, you know, the old phrase about it's not what you know, it's who you know. I think it has to be both. You got to be good at what you do. But having some doors open for you isn't so bad either.
No, it doesn't. My guest is Eldon Ham, author of the book Broadcasting Baseball, A History of the National Pastime on Radio and Television. It's a fascinating read. But, Eldon, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Broadcasting Baseball?
I'd like them to have the same experience that I did, is finding out that everything happens at the same time. It evolves. It doesn't just occur in a vacuum. To me, that's the most fascinating, interesting part of history. You look at all of these things together, and that, when you reflect on it, becomes the magic of what became the game that we knew, particularly as we're talking about baseball. It didn't just happen by itself. The broadcasting propelled it, and as we think about it, baseball influenced the broadcasting as well. So it was a two-way street.
It absolutely was. It absolutely was. My guest has been Eldon Ham, author of the book Broadcasting Baseball. Eldon, if people like what they hear, they're fascinated by the subject like I am, they want to learn more, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Yeah, well, obviously the first choice is the book. My book itself can be on Amazon.com and any a number of other places. But there is plenty out there. This book that I did has 700 notes at the end, because there's a lot that you can find. There was a book by some professors called Centerfield Shot, which deals with the television part of the whole story. There are other books out there that deal with the announcers themselves. Mine is the only one that ties it all together as an evolutionary process, but there is a whole lot out there. You can look up History of Broadcasting, History of Baseball, either one, and eventually they lead you to the same place.
That is great. My guest has been Eldon Ham. Eldon, thank you so much for being my special guest. I enjoyed talking with you. We'll talk to you down the road.
My pleasure. It was a lot of fun.